Okay, would somebody like to read?
Oh, sure.
Yes, thank you. I'm not sure, but I think it's November 9th. Oh, the almost same day. No?
Yes.
Because I just wanted to check my name.
Yeah, I think we start with.
Yeah, thanks. Do you have your glasses?
I have the glasses.
Is it enough light?
Yes, thank you. Okay. November 9th. 6 p.m. While Prabhupada sat alone in his fifth floor room in Dr. Mishra's yoga studio, the lights suddenly went out. This was his first experience of the first moments of the New York City blackout of 1965. Now in India, power failure occurred commonly, so Prabhupada, while surprised to find the same thing in America, remained undisturbed. He began chanting the Hare Krishna mantra on his beads. Meanwhile, outside his room, the entire New York metropolitan area had been plunged into darkness. The massive power failure had suddenly left the entire city without electricity, trapping 800,000 people in the subways. Oh, that must be awful. And affecting more than 30 million people. Yep, 30 million. In 9 states and 3 Canadian provinces. Whoa. 2 hours later, a man from Dr. Mishra's apartment arrived at the door with candles and some fruit. He found Prabhupada in a pleasant mood, sitting there in the darkness, chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this man informed him of the serious nature of such a blackout in New York City. Prabhupada thanked him and returned again to his chanting. The blackout lasted until 7 o'clock the next morning. So that was 12 hours of blackout. Can you imagine being in the subways when that happens? The train doesn't move, and you're stuck on the train. Oh, maybe I don't want to meditate on that. Okay. Srila Prabhupada received a letter, a reply to his letter of November 8th, to Tirtha Maharaj in Calcutta. Prabhupada had explained his hopes and plans for staying in America, but he stressed that his godbrothers would give him their vote of confidence, as well as some tangible support. His godbrothers had not been working cooperatively. Each leader was interested more in maintaining his own building than in working with the others to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya around the world. So how would it be possible for them to share Srila Prabhupada's vision of establishing a branch in New York City? They would see it as his separate attempt. Yet, despite the unlikely odds, he appealed to their missionary spirit and reminded them of the desires of their spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Their Guru Maharaj wanted Krishna consciousness to be spread in the West. But when Prabhupada finally got Tirtha Maharaj's reply, he found it unfavorable. His godbrother did not argue against his attempting something in New York City, but he politely said that the Gaudiya Math funds could not be used for such a proposal. Prabhupada replied, "It is not very encouraging. But still, I'm not a man to be disappointed." In fact, he found little hope in Tirtha Maharaj's reply. So, he described to his godbrother the property he had recently found for sale at 143 West 72nd Street. The building, only 18 and a half feet wide and 100 feet deep, consisted of the first floor store, a basement, and a mezzanine. Prabhupada presented Tirtha Maharaj the price, 100 grand with a $20,000 cash down payment, and remarked that this building was twice the size of their research institute in Calcutta. Prabhupada conceived of the basement as a kitchen and dining area, the first floor as a lecture hall, and the mezzanine as personal apartments, with a separate area for the deity of Lord Krishna. Appropriately, Prabhupada had described himself as a, quote, man not to be disappointed, unquote. He was convinced that if there were a center where people could come here from a pure devotee, the genuine God-conscious culture of India could begin in America. Yet because he had made his plans dependent on obtaining an expensive building in Manhattan, his goal seemed unreachable. Still, he was persistently writing to prominent devotees in India, although they were not interested in his plans. Why should they not help, he thought. After all, they were devotees of Krishna. Shouldn't the devotees come forward to establish the first Krishna temple in America? Certainly, he was qualified and authorized to spread the message of Krishna. As for the place, New York was perhaps the most cosmopolitan city in the world. He had found a building, not very expensive, and a good location, and there was a great need for a Krishna temple here to offset the propaganda of the Indian Mayavadis. The Krishna Bhaktas to whom he was writing understood Lord Krishna to be not simply a Hindu deity, but the Supreme Lord, worshipable for the whole world. So they should be pleased to see Krishna worshipped in New York. Krishna himself said in the Bhagavad Gita, "Give up all other duties and surrender to me." So, if they were Krishna's devotees, why would they not help? What kind of devotee was it who did not want to glorify the Lord? But Srila Prabhupada did not judge beforehand who would serve Krishna's mission and who would not. He was fully surrendered and fully dependent on Krishna, and in obedience to his spiritual master, he would approach everyone without discrimination to ask for help. There was Sumati Morarji. She had helped him in publishing the Bhagavatam, and she had sent him to America. In a recent letter to her, he had only given hints. Srila Prabhupada writes, "I am just giving you the idea, and if you kindly think over the matter seriously and consult your beloved Lord Balakrishna, certainly you will be further enlightened in the matter. There is scope, and there is certainly necessity also, and it is the duty of every Indian, especially the devotees of Lord Krishna, to take up the matter. But he had received no reply. He had not heard from her since Butler, although her words to him had seemed prophetic, and they had stuck with him. Her words are, "I feel you should stay there until you fully recover from your illness and return only after you have completed your mission." Only after you have completed your mission, which is huge. Now, Sumati Morarji must do something big. He told her point blank, "I think, therefore, that a temple of Balakrishna in New York may immediately be started for this purpose. And as a devotee of Lord Balakrishna, you should execute this great and noble work. Till now, there is no worshipable temple of the Hindus in New York, although in India there are so many American missionary establishments and churches. So I shall request you to do this noble act, and it will be recorded in the history of the world that the first Hindu temple is started by a pious Hindu lady, Srimati Sumati Morarji, who is not only a big business magnate in India, but a pious Hindu lady and a great devotee of Lord Krishna. This task is for you, and glorious at the same time." Prabhupada assured her that he had no ambition to become the proprietor of a house or a temple in America, but for preaching, a building would be absolutely required. Srila Prabhupada writes, "They should have association of bona fide devotees of the Lord. They should join the kirtan, glorifying the Lord. They should hear the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. They should have intimate touch with the temple or place of the Lord. And they should be given ample chance to worship the Lord in the temple. Under the guidance of the bona fide devotee, they can be given such facilities. And the way of the Srimad Bhagavatam is open for everyone." Prabhupada informed her that he had located a building just suitable for this great missionary work. It was ideal. Quote, "as if it was built for this purpose only," unquote. Unquote. Prabhupada writes again, "and your simple willingness to do the act will complete everything smoothly. The house is practically three stories, ground floor, basement, and two stories up, with all the suitable arrangements for gas, heat, etc. The ground floor may be utilized for preparation of prasadam of Balakrishna, because the preaching center will not be for dry speculation, but for actual gain, for delicious prasadam. I have already tested how the people here like the vegetable prasadam prepared by me. They will forget meat eating and pay for the expenses. American people are not poor like the Indians. And if they appreciate a thing, they are prepared to spend any amount on such hobby. They are being exploited simply by jugglery of words and bodily gymnastics, and still they are spending for that. But when they will have the actual commodity and are theirs and feel pleasure by eating very delicious prasadam of Balakrishna, I am sure a unique thing will be introduced in America." Now, according to his plans, Prabhupada had a week left in America. "My term to stay in America will be finished on the 17th of November, 1965.
Oh, that's 50 years ago. Just in 2 days, 50 years ago.
He was going to leave.
Today's
16th, so tomorrow. Today's, right, tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day he was supposed to leave.
50 years.
Wow. "But," he writes, "I am believing in your foretelling You should stay there until you fully recover your health and return after you have completed your mission. Oh my gosh.
Cool.
No problem. I'm sorry, it was so long.
That's fine. It's just exactly tomorrow we will read about several issues. Let's change the prayer. Om Magyarism Ramda Sevinanjana Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sattva Taya. Se Shrimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda Namah. Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Guru Vani Pachyajani, Nirvishaya Shri Shri Vani Pashityaya Vishri Kuribe. Jashi Krishna Chitani, Prabhunti Nandu, Shri Abedi Gdata Harshadasana. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was just thinking that why don't we share our meeting with Srila Prabhupada? When I say meeting, like personal meeting, like not just physical presence, but also, it is like, of course, we all know that we met Srila Prabhupada in the form of his book or whatever. But by a personal meeting, I mean that like Krishna, he's a person, yes, but impersonal is. They meet him, but they still don't see a person. Yes? So the first time we realize he's a person, we realize that moment. Because maybe like I'm reading and I heard from others that I met Srila Prabhupada on the pages of his books, but I didn't realize that. And also, maybe our first prayer to Srila Prabhupada, like personally to him. Because mostly, like, you know, when I came, you feel very moved to talk just to Krishna. And I mean, it's like for everyone it's different. Yeah. So, I just want to share first my little story. And it was just when I joined the temple in Moscow after a few months, maybe.
How old were you?
I was 23. And not so young already, but still
but
young.
still young, and looking for excitement. 23.
Yes, looking for excitement. That's it. And so I loved the philosophy. I loved Krishna very much. I didn't know about his pastimes so much, but I loved Krishna. He was very nice. And about Srila Prabhupada, I heard a lot, and they told me to offer him pushpa. And but still, like I never talked to him personally or whatever. And then one day, because I learned a little bit of philosophy, and I don't remember exactly the issue, but I think that I had some doubts that Srila Prabhupada can bring me back to Krishna or something like that. I can go back to Krishna in this lifetime, so something with that related, because it's something like that. And then I realized I have to talk personally to Prabhupada and to tell him that I have doubts and to ask him to
dispel,
to remove the doubts or whatever. Yeah. Because I felt like, you know, just personally. Because I believed, like I trusted him, at the same time something was creating those doubts in me. So I felt that I better approach personally Srila Prabhupada than even any other devotee. So I felt that urge inside of me. But I didn't know how to approach him. It was his murti, but I didn't know. So I decided that I would write him a letter. I wrote it by hand, that letter. I explained to him about my doubts, and I asked him to remove my doubts, because I said, I feel only you can do it. And then I thought, how can I give him this letter? He doesn't really know me. So I approached the pujari, who was my friend, Madhu Madhavi, in Moscow, and I told him, you are a pujari. Your servant, the Lordship, Shishidanita Sachasutta, and definitely Srila Prabhupada knows you much more than he knows me. So please give him this letter. So she took the letter and she put, like, in front of Srila Prabhupada, in front of his murti in Moscow. And she left it there for, I don't know, half an hour or whatever. I was completely satisfied because I felt like in this way he will read my letter. And what happened then? In a few days, all my doubts were removed. They were not just removed. It was like you know, you go to the jungle and some person, they're like cutting the jungle. So he cut the jungle with my doubt. And it happened just here and there. Like one person said that, in lecture they said that, in book I read that. But in a few days, all my doubts were gone. And I came to Srila Prabhupada and came to, because I said, Srila Prabhupada, I know you did it personally. You did, because I sent you that letter. And also, like, you didn't come to my dream. I didn't have like a vision of you. But what you did, I know you did this. You did it through these people. You did it through the books and whatever. So that was my personal, say, a personal encounter with Srila Prabhupada. Because before it, it was impersonal. Like, you know, you accept him, but you don't realize he's a person. Okay. Maybe, like, not first, but whatever you want to say.
I appreciate you saying that about the letter, because getting rid of doubts can take not just years, but decades. And you were so smart to go right to the source and have him create the solution immediately. That's
probably he's very admirable.
Yeah, it's very, very good. I don't know. My introduction to Srila Prabhupada came in different stages. First of all, I think there was a moment of enlightenment when I met my husband. And after getting to know him, we played music in a band for a few months. He started talking about his experience with his father, who was one of the original hippies, left his job designing ballistic missiles at MIT to become a contractor. Yeah, he said, I want nothing to do with this. He grew his hair long, moved into a commune, and became vegetarian. And vegetarian, that was the big thing. So my husband basically looked me in the eye and said, you don't have to eat that anymore. I said, no, you're the first person to ever tell me that. And that just shook me up. So that was the beginning. And then after that, I began to slow down my participation in the Catholic community here in Boston. And then began years, actually, of searching. But during those years, actually, my husband and I, we met the devotees for the first time outside Park Street. They were standing there. And when you see them, the first impression is they're wearing their pajamas and they're very pure because they shave their heads like little babies. I said, this is nice. And I could just feel that they're wearing their pajamas because they're going somewhere. Like when we wore our pajamas as kids, it means you're going to bed. But these people are going somewhere, very comfortable and very beautiful, like bed. So, yeah, that's nice. But I was too afraid to go to the temple. And then I guess so many things happened. And then the big one for me was the Ratha Yatra. Boston Ratha Yatra in 1994. Then I met the devotees. I saw Prabhupada's picture. And I said, this is really nice. This is what religion should be, because everybody's happy. Not putting my head on the floor, oh, I'm such a horrible person, but let's celebrate. So, anyway, many other facets to the story, but I don't want to take too much time.
So what about personal encounter with Srila Prabhupada? First time you realized he's a person and he cares?
Oh, I saw his photo in the books. I saw his photo.
So immediately you felt like...
Here's a nice person. And then when I read the books, I realized, he says, this is really nice. His whole attitude in reading the books is like a grandfather.
Wow.
He's a grandfather. And he's trying to help me. Understand. He's very patient and very thorough. And when I heard his voice, I liked the sound of his voice, but I couldn't understand because of the accent. But I liked his manner was again very grandfatherly, slow and patient. And if I have to say this 100 times, I'll say it 100 times, so long as you get the message. Yeah, his books. The books.
Thank you.
Okay,
Mukta. I did the Bhagavad Gita when I was at Yale Mass as a freshman, and read that all day. I'd met the Sina Harinam before, and that was amazing. And I read the Bhagavad Gita, and then that Christmas I came to the temple, and I think it was the old temple on North Beacon Street. It was the Christmas of 1970.
Wow.
And the devotees, at that time, I mean, it was only 5 years, and everybody was new, and everybody was young, and everybody was orange or white, and actually the householders then were bright yellow.
Wow.
And the everybody, and the brahmacharis were, you know, just some cloth they bought at the cloth store and dyed, and it was nothing was fancy. And then I went to the temple, and then the thing is that it was new, and everything was centered around Prabhupada. I mean, they had a beautiful temple room, and they had the. I don't really know who was on the altar, because I looked at the altar and first of all, I wasn't wearing my glasses. But anyway, the altar. But everybody was. I remember the first thing. One of the first things I did, I sat down in the temple room and stuck facing the deity, and I stuck my feet up straight at the deities, and that was my first chastisement. It wasn't heavy, but it was, don't sit with
your feet. And just tells you punishment.
Don't sit with your feet towards the deity. And that was good. But the thing is, it was everything was like really Prabhupada centered there. Every time the devotees are always talking about Prabhupada. As much as they talked about Krishna, they talked about Prabhupada probably as much or more. And the books were just coming out one at a time. And every time a new book would come out, devotees would read the books, and I mean everybody was reading everybody was reading everything that came out. Mm-hmm. Everything was new. There was no.
Right.
And during prasadam at lunchtime, everybody was there, like 20 or 30, 40 devotees, and they played a lecture tape by Prabhupada, and they were always reading something, a lecture by Prabhupada, or playing a lecture by Prabhupada. And one thing I remember, one of the first things I remember him saying was, "And you should know that you're a fool number one." And that was that.
Did you like it?
Well, I was kind of shocked. I mean, I thought I was kind of smart. I come here and I'm fool number one. It was good. It was good for me because, you know, obviously I needed to hear it because I thought I was smart. And it was a different thing. It was new, and everything was Prabhupada centered. One day I went there and all the devotees were sitting around in a circle with a big mantras cloth in the middle, and everybody had like a pile of incense, and they were putting, it was the spiritual sky, because the spiritual sky was a business that was run from California, but they sent the incense to some of the temples for the devotees to pack the incense, so everybody was sitting around like packing incense packs to be sold, and I helped to that, and playing Prabhupada lecture at the time. So that was my experience. And I had some other experiences. I mean, that went on for a long time, and then I moved in the temple, and then there was, you know, it was Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada all the time. And then I was here when the day Prabhupada left his body, temple president got us all together, made an announcement. You know, it was super heavy, and you couldn't help. I mean, things are the same now. Prabhupada is still at the center, but there's so many other. Everybody has their spiritual master, and things. I mean, there's things are different now. Prabhupada is still in the center, but it's 50 years later. He's been gone physically for 38 years. But when I got second initiation, I got first initiation by Prabhupada in New York after the 1976 Rath Yatra, I was 23 when I moved in the temple, and when we got initiated that summer at Ratiyatra, and Prabhupada gave a class that morning, but he didn't come down for the fire sacrifice because he was sick at the time, so he stayed up in his room. But he, and then the second initiation I got here, Satsrup Maharaj, and a few, he had just become spiritual master and he was accepting disciples. So everybody who had been first initiated here, that was the system, whoever was the zonal acharya would accept them as their, for second initiation. And he said from the beginning, there were different ways that the spiritual masters preached about it at the time. Some of them claimed the second initiated disciples as their disciples. And Satsrup Maharaj, he said, he left it up to the individual. He said, if you feel in your heart that you worship Prabhupada exclusively, and I'm like just an older godbrother who's, it's like a formality, then if that's the way you want to look at it, that's okay. You keep up that spirit. And if you want to worship me as spiritual master in combination with Prabhupada, then that's okay too. So I was one of those Satsrup Maharaj is not the same as Prabhupada, but the spiritual master was how, in disciplic succession, along with, it was a little hard to understand. I mean, it's not easy to understand, but the basic idea wasn't hard to at least intuitively understand. And one of the first things that Satsrup, one of the lessons, I used to listen to lessons in the kitchen all the time. One thing that was really important that he said early on was that at the time when I got initiated, it was 1976, and there were thousands of disciples, and Prabhupada's health wasn't good. So wherever he would go, he would be pretty insulated by, his Tamal Krishna, whoever the senior devotees were. And if you were just, a new devotee, you couldn't just go into Prabhupada, say, I'd like to see Prabhupada, and they'd say, okay. It wasn't like 26 Second Avenue. I'd say, oh, I'll take you up to meet the Swamiji. It wasn't like that, Yeah, you could see him, but it just wasn't the same. And it wasn't like that. And mostly you'd see him in class or kirtans. So Satsrup Maharaj, he said that, it's just like later in the movement, Prabhupada had so many disciples, and you couldn't just say, oh, I'd like to go see Prabhupada. But it wasn't like that. But if I'm there, or Tamal Krishna Maharaj is there, or Kirtananda Swami was there, they could go see him anytime. If they came to a temple where Prabhupada was, they could go see him. So he said, if I say, I'm going to see Srila Prabhupada, you come with me, then you'd go right in. So there's a very, it's very common sense, but it's a very, crucial point that the way that, it's very easy to understand if your spiritual master can easily go see Prabhupada, and if they say, you come with me, then you can see Prabhupada. So that was over the years since I heard that. My relationship with Prabhupada has definitely increased and improved and understood a lot more about my relationship with Prabhupada because of approaching. Like you said, when you wanted to give a lecture, a letter to Prabhupada, you gave it to your friend who's a pujari. That's the system. I mean, that's our whole system. Because, Prabhupada, the reason you got, this is speculation, but probably the reason you got such quick response from Prabhupada, because you approached him in the right way. That's our system. You go through the devotees who are, anyway, so there were other things. There was one time at Henry Street in 1973 or 4, and I was still living outside, and I had a friend here who used to come to the temple all the time too, like me. His name is Jonathan. You might know him, he comes once in a while. Jonathan, and me and him were sort of the, you know, we were the same. And so we drove down to New York to, because we knew Prabhupada was coming. So we went to the, and we got there a couple hours before he was supposed to arrive at the LaGuardia. And we come in the temple room, and the temple room was a big temple room, quite a bit bigger than this, but it was a wreck because they were redecorating, and they just had repainted the walls, and they were, you know, everything was still all over the place. There was scaffolding and paint cans, paint brushes, and everything. It was like, it was a construction site, basically. And there was a lot of devotees there. I came into that, and I'm like, wow, what's going on here? And I came into it, and everybody was running around like crazy, trying to get everything ready. There was a lot of devotees here, like 100 devotees, and people running all over the place. And every like 5 or 10 minutes, somebody would come in the temple room and say, Prabhupada just landed. Then like 5 or 10 minutes later, they'd run and say, Prabhupada will be here in 45 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And then, you know, Prabhupada will be here in 20 minutes, and Prabhupada will be here in 15 minutes. And in 15 minutes, actually at 10 minutes, it was still a mess.
Yeah.
And then, but like 1 minute or 2 minutes before he got in the tent. I guess they were just taking everything out and throwing it in the closet just to get it out of the way. But like the minute before he walked in, it was nice. The whole temple room was nice. It was beautiful. And Prabhupada came in, and all some of his, you know, he came. It was already like 100 devotees there, and like 100 more came in with him. I don't know, 100, but a lot of devotees came in with him, and he walked in, and very, you know, he walked in very, like everybody says, very stately and very elegant and very, you know, dignified, and, you know, all the good, nice thing word, you know, descriptive things you can say. He walked in, and he came in and sat down on his vyasasani, and he started. I can't remember exactly if you started playing the kartals and chanting, or if somebody else did. I can't really remember. But there was a kirtan, a really fired up kirtan. And the same thing, everybody's young and jumping up like in the air. And all the women, you know, there. And at that time, I'm not sure at that time, but earlier when I first started going, I called. Yeah, was all the men would stand on one side, all the women on another side, and I think mostly they didn't have their heads covered, and all the women, they did dandavats too, just like the men.
Wow.
That only stopped in like, I don't know, like 75 or something, at least here in Boston, until for at least 7 or 8 or 9 years, the women were doing dandavats too.
But did they stop? Srila Prabhupada said they shouldn't do that?
He said something. I don't know exactly how it happened, but I don't know. But
okay.
Something he said, and so then it's, you know, gradually it stopped. They didn't take it right away. So a lot of women kept doing dandavats for a while, and gradually they changed. But anyway, so, but the main thing is that, you know, everybody, when there was a kirtan, It was boom, 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 boom.
Ferocious.
Boom. And it was great. And then Prabhupada gave a lecture, a greeting lecture. And I went up to his room. And then we were supposed to go out on Everybody went out on Hari Nam to some place in downtown Manhattan, and I drove there with I had borrowed my father's car, and I went there with Jonathan and a few other people. And I got in an accident on the way and totaled the car.
Oh, Christ.
And nobody got hurt. That was memorable also. But not as memorable as seeing Prabhupada. Yeah. Well, I wanted to say something, one thing about, a couple of things about the thing. Prabhupada talked about not a man to be easily discouraged. But a devotee is, don't get discouraged. There's one case where a disciple talked to Prabhupada and he said, sometimes, I'm struggling really hard and I feel discouraged. And Prabhupada's response was that is not allowed. You're not allowed to get discouraged. And you might say, well, what do you mean not allowed to? I feel discouraged. And Prabhupada said, it's a really interesting thing to say. It's like, that's not allowed. Krishna, you can't be discouraged. You're going back to Godhead. Krishna is your best friend, and he's taking you back home. So you can't be discouraged. And the other thing was, Prabhupada didn't try to figure out who to approach and who not to approach. And that's Lord Chaitanya's movie. He said, he gave love of Krishna very freely, not distinguishing who is a fit candidate and who's not. Everyone is a pure spirit soul. Everyone's eligible to serve Krishna. Everyone should be serving Krishna. So for a devotee, we have every right to ask anybody for anything. We can, if you meet some real rich guy and you like, and you can say, oh, can you give a couple $1,000,000? We want, you're perfectly within your rights to ask him, because you're not asking for yourself, you're asking for Krishna. And you have every right as Krishna's representative to ask them. You have to be sure that you're not, well, even if you are doing it a little bit for yourself, we're not pure in our motivation. But anyway, the point is that we don't distinguish in preaching who we should ask to chant Hare Krishna, who we should distribute prasadam to. Of course, some people you have to avoid. If somebody just acting like ridiculous, then you have to avoid them. But aside from that, we don't try to. Okay, those are some of my experiences. My main experiences have been through Prabhupada. It's so important to listen to Prabhupada's lectures and his kirtans, his bhajans. He's present and read his books. Those are such important things to do.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's beautiful.
Shukra Prabhupada. Ja.